Shua Jacobson, Parshas Bamidbar.
Morning, Rabbi Yisai. Always a pleasure to be here. There was a bit of a misunderstanding about the title. The title is actually about the subject today is about Shavuos. We're talking about Shavuos today, not about Shabbos. My apologies for that. So I'd like to speak. The basic structure of the shir is I'd like to touch on the points of the godless of a yid. If we appreciate our own godless, we appreciate what's possible on Shavuos, and then a bit about what Shavuos is, or how we prepare for Shavuos. And then I'm going to lead some of the ideas I'm sure people have heard before, but I want to lead it up to what I believe is a very strong kasha to do with Sfir Sa'im and Shavuos. So by way of a hakdama, I'll tell you about a true story that happened to me a few days ago. I wouldn't have believed it if it wasn't me in the car. And this is to help us to appreciate what it means to be a yid. So I was in quite a decent length taxi ride, and the driver was of a different faith. You may be able to figure out from the story what faith he was from. So because I have an American accent, so people pick up on it, and he asked me, where am I from? So I told him where I was from. To make conversation with him, so I said to him, where are you from? So I expected a certain set of answers, and he didn't say them. He said, I'm from Italy. So I looked at him, and I thought about Italy, having been there, and I didn't put the two together. So I said, that's interesting. And, you know, how did you end up here? So he said, oh, it's a long story. But basically, he had a lot to say. He had a lot to say. And he said it was very hard coming here. And he said some very self-critical things about his community. He said that if you're a poor person, then you're sort of brushed aside. And there's even a very horrible nickname, which he told me in Arabic, which I didn't understand what it meant. But basically, if you're poor, that was in itself the gnai, which I thought, the yidden, it's just the opposite. We say the Talmidei Chachamim come from the children of the poor. We know that this is not something to be pushed down. But nevertheless, he said people didn't help him. They didn't help him to get started in his business. And then he said, so I said to him, and how did you end up here? So he said, well, one time I was listening to the drasha, or whatever you want to call it, in our place of Beis Tifla, and the fellow who was speaking said something, and I was very upset with it, and I said in front of the people after the thing was over, I said, that's not what our book says. You tell us we should kill people. Unfortunately, we see how timely this message would have been if there'd be more people like this fellow. He said, you tell us we should kill people. Our book says just the opposite. The book doesn't say like that. So I sat down, went back to my seat, he says, and my father came over to me, and he said to me, whatever his name was, he said, you must leave this country, they're going to kill you. And that was it. Soon after, he packed his bags, and he ended up here in jolly old England. So then he said, the story isn't over. So he said to me, and now that I'm living here, where he has a bit more freedom of speech, or so he believes, he says, my wife begs me. She says, whatever you do, don't tell people what you think. Don't tell people the truth. She's like, why? Because I want my husband to be alive for me. I don't want to raise two orphans. So this was a story from the man himself. I'm not sure why he was being so outspoken about his life situation, but nevertheless, I took away from it, we, the Yidden, punkt verkehrt. If a Rav says a drasha and somebody disagrees, there'll be lines, there'll be queues of people afterwards telling him how he didn't quite get it right, and there's Mar Mokim over here that says not like that, and Kashas and Terutzim. And we look at the pursuit of Emes as being one of our Ikarim. Mashen Kein, we can see by the Goyim, not only is this something that's not so important, but they'll kill you for saying the truth. So people, we have to appreciate what it means to be a Yid, what it means to have the truth, and what it would be Mevakesh to Emes. And just another nakuda to do with the greatness of a yid, I heard another very nice idea, b'shem Revolba. Revolba said, and we'll try it out, see how true it is, he said, if you go to your local shops, or you think in your mind now of going to your local shops, I say to everybody, okay, everybody, let's picture Leicester Road. between Wellington Street and, I don't know, Northumberland. And I say to you, start trying to imagine how many shops there are, the names of the shops, or what types of shops there are along the parade. So I myself, when I heard this, I started thinking through. I came up with 5 or 6 or 7. I was doing okay. And then he said like this. He said, okay, so now you know most of the shops there. Now describe for me one floor up. What does it look like one floor up? Now, admittedly, there are a few shops on the upper floor as well, but most of us have no idea what the upper floors look like. So he says the nimshal for that is that's exactly how we live with ourselves. We get to know ourselves on the base level. It's not how we relate to our goof, our basic needs. So, but there are layers and layers and layers in a yid above. And we don't even think about it. They're there. We know they're there. But we're not in contact with them. And a person has to realize that we're not just the simple bodies and the connections that our neshamas have on this level. We go miles and miles up, right up to the Kisei HaKavod. And interestingly, just as an Eishtech, he said, Freud, if anybody cares who he was, Freud got it exactly wrong. He also said there are lots of levels to a person. But he said, let's go in the basement and see the cobwebs and the rats. Yeah, so, okay, it's a joke if you know, but nevertheless, our mahalach is just the opposite. Our mahalach is to see that a yid goes up, up, up. We go up to the Kisei HaKavod. And the same Nakuda I heard as well, another idea, very beautiful idea. This, I hope, isn't too basic, but we see that Moshe Rabbeinu was told when he approached the snare to remove his shoes. So, the Pasuk says, V'yomer al tikriv haloim, shal na'alecha me'al raglecha, ki mokim asher ata oimed alav ad maskoid ishu. Take your shoes off because you're in a holy place. Now, chayra, taking shoes off and being in a holy place, what is what kind of a thing is this? Why do shoes need to come off? So the Ramban says the snare was on the Rosh Ahar, it was a holy place, and he says v'asub in ilus a sandal, and you can't be in these places with shoes on. And v'chein amru b'kol makim sheshchina nigleis asub in ilus a sandal. He says anywhere where there's it's a holy makim, you can't be there with shoes. And he says we find this by Yeshua. He was told to take his shoe off. We'll see his one. It was, the lashon is yochid. V'chein kahanim loishim shebemikdash elei chayfim. They could only serve in the mikdash with their shoes off. So I don't know if anybody's ever thought about this. We just thought maybe that's the kahanim's uniform, or maybe people didn't think about it. But so what's the pshat? So the Kli Yochar says that first of all it starts with a kashi. Says the Mefarshim ask why was Moshe told to take both shoes off? But by Yeshua, when he met up with the Malach, the Pasuk says differently. It says, Shal Nalcha, take, which is Mashma, take one of your shoes off. Now, it could be the Kavanah was to take both off, but Lamaisa, how it's written, is with a Lashon Yochid. Sorry?
We're just speaking about Moshe
Rabbeinu. Moshe Rabbeinu was told to take both shoes off his feet,
yeah.
And Yeshua was told to take, the Lashon was Lashon Yochid, take one shoe off.
Did I get it wrong?
Go on.
Anybody allowed to go on her bias and shoes on?
Well, the thing we say, as far as I remember, there's a Mishnah. It says the Kahanim and the Azorah have to be avoided with. Yeah. I don't remember that you can't go on Har HaBayis with shoes. And there's a Mishnah. No, what does the Mishnah say about what you can't bring up with your makel and your wallet and what else? That doesn't. Someone can remind me if they remember. Anybody know? Okay, but sorry. Anyway, okay, I'll have to check. But so the kahanim for sure, the avoda, the part of the avoda is not to have the shoes on.
One of the big kahanim.
Sorry.
Shoes are not part of the big.
Definitely not. And more, and the chatzitza, but more than that, we're saying it's not just how they dressed. It was a positive thing not to have shoes on. So the question is why not? So he begins with this question. Your shoe was told seemingly to take one shoe off. Maybe the kahanim has two shoes. Moshe should take both shoes off. So what is it? So the Kli Yochar says, B'shem Rebbeinu Bachya B'chaya says that they explain what is with the shoes off. Shom Mefarshim Pirshu, Shana Alecha al Harchokas Agashmias. Taking off your shoe is the idea to distance yourself from Gashmias. We'll see in a second. And because Moshe was on a greater Madrega of separating himself from Gashmias, so he was capable of distancing himself more. So the Lashon of the Pasuk is take both shoes off. Mashiach and Yeshua was on his great Madrega, but not as much, so he only was required to take one shoe off. So what's the Pshat? So the pshat is a remez to the idea that when you're contact with Kedusha, with the Shechina, so you can't have your intimate fest contact with your gashmis. You have to go beyond into your neshama, the zone of your neshama. And the idea of a shoe is the same point, because a foot, if that's our body, so it needs a protective wrapping. It needs something, a leather wrapping we put around our foot. A shoe is also like a skin, but we need a harder skin on the outside. So it's the us surrounded by the shoe, right? So if so, we're saying divest yourself of the body to some degree and focus on the panemius, your panemius part, which is your neshama. So now, the shiur I heard, this idea I had actually heard before, but he took it one step further. He says, if that's the mashal, think about what this is telling us. It means if we're being compared to a foot, are we only a foot? That's it? The Jew is the foot? Not at all. The very, very bottom, a minor trivial part of a human body is the foot. It's the bottom, it's the base, it's important, but then comes the ankle and the knee and the thigh and the chest and the torso, and finally, so to speak, miles above is the head, and the shoe is nowhere near that. That means, again, the same idea, that the yid has got madregas and madregas above what we take for granted. We think we're just limited, we're mitzimtzum to the goof and the activities that we do in it. We're actually connected up to the kisei hakavod. So I'm trying to build the case that really there is a tremendous greatness that we can accomplish in shvuas, and a tremendous madrega that we can tap into, whether we're aware of it or not. That's the reality. And I want to tell you one other idea, which I looked very hard for. It's quoted B'Shem the Avni Nezer, and also B'Shem the Kli Chemda, the following idea. They ask Akasha. It says, famous Medrash, again, we've all heard this before, that before the Yidden offered the Torah, so Hashem offered the other nations. Right? So he went to the other nations, he went to the B'nai Adam, says, do you want the Torah? They said, with Maksivbe. He said, not to kill. They said, no, that's our lifeline, that's how we dominate the world. We have to kill. The Ishmael offered them. They said, well, what's in it? He said, you can't steal. He said, no, I'm sorry. That's how we make our living. Sorry. So if I'm not mistaken, I saw somewhere else that Ishmael was tested with znus, but the parish I saw, or the medrash I saw, was with theft. Said that's our ikur. We can't distance ourselves. And then the Yidden, we say, Nasev and Ishma, and everything's okay. But imagine this offer. You go to someone and you say to them, I'm offering you something, and I hire a psychologist to find out what drives you crazy. Right? Let's say I'm trying to sell you a house. Right? And I know, and I don't want to sell it to you for some reason, and I find out what you hate. So I paint the whole, you see, you don't like purple walls. So I paint all the walls purple. And I give you the best deal and the best financing. It's a wonderful house, but the walls are purple. So you're going to come in, you're going to say, I can't live with this. This is repulsive to me. What do you want from me? I'll look elsewhere, right? So in the same way, if Hashem comes along with an offer and says to the nation world, I know your, so to speak, your psychology inside and out, and I'm going to find something that needles you, bli gvul. And I'm going to focus on that and say, this is what the Torah says. Will you accept it? So they can't. It's not shy. This disgusts us. This is repulsive to not be able to do this. You're telling us to rip out our essence. Comes along the Yidden, and the Yidden are offered the Torah, Nasev and Ishma, and we're not told what's difficult for us. So it's true. It's a Gvaldika Madreig. We said Nasev and Ishma, but we weren't pushed. We didn't have our buttons pushed. So why is that a fair offer? Why did we get away so easily, so to speak? So
they were rejecting the seven mitzvahs of Bnei Noach, which is before the Torah. Okay,
Enochinami. So he says like this, it's either wherever, as I say, I looked for it, I couldn't find it, only found it quoted. It's like this, we were tested in the same way. What does it mean we were tested in the same way? Where was our test? Hashem said, I'm going to give the Torah on Har Sinai, and you have to do something to make a boundary around it, and don't come on the Har. And Moshe was told repeatedly, go and tell them, don't come on the Har. Now, we maybe don't relate to some. It's like, what was the big deal? How hard was it to stay off the Har? That's because we don't understand ourselves. The thing that was to push our buttons, to make it hard for us, is Hashem knows the essence of a Yid, the panemius of a Yid, is she'ifa, to be davuk with Hashem. And if we tell you, if Torah tells us, stay off the mountain, that's like saying, deny your essence. Where you want to be, there's nowhere else you want to be more than Davik with Hashem. Now I'm pushing your button. This is going to be hard for you. Stay back. Don't come. So he says, that was exactly the test. That was exactly the test. And one of my Talmidim in Hale said to me, isn't that interesting? He said, isn't that the same idea by the Eitz Hadas? That Adam was originally told, there's something you can't have. Knowledge. Stay away from the Eitz Hadas. Stay back. And that again, what do we want more than to have a yediyah, a klorkite in the Ribbono Shel Olam, klorkite in Torah? And Adam was told, stay away from it. And interesting, they both had this boundary, because Adam created the extra gezerah and don't even touch it. And by Har Sinai, Rashi says that there was a boundary which was even further away, that according to one medrash says it even told the yidden to stay back. So we see there's this idea of staying away and staying even further away. So the Nisoyan was similar. So now you might say to me, okay, we've got an insight into what the great yearning of a yid is, but why is this so important? Okay, it's important to know who we are, but I think there's a level deeper than that. And that is, there was an expression when I was a boy, I don't know if it's still alive and kicking, that sometimes a person would say, I'm an artist stuck in an accountant's body. Yeah. So what does it mean? So you find these men in their 50s and their 60s who had decent careers as accountants or businessmen, and it was, let's say, a career that was quite predictable, and all of a sudden here they close up shop and they go to become a windsurfer, or they go to become an artist, or they go to do something else. And people say, you know, Meshuggah. So he says, no, my whole life I was suppressing my real rotzen. My real rotzen was to be living in nature or painting pictures or whatever it was. Now, okay, I'm not going to comment on whether he made the right decision or not, but he's trying to be in touch. He knows his real sipuk is not being met by whatever this lifestyle of being an accountant or whatever, I don't know, a businessman. That wasn't doing it for him. What he needed was to be in touch with his inner self, and his life, for him now, is satisfied, he's happy, etc. So that was the expression, and kach haya, they were ma'asim like this. So it's the same way really by a yid. Why? Because we're really a yid, sometimes trapped in some other body. That means we get so caught up with the pressures of a society, the pressures of what other people are doing, the expectations of who we're supposed to be, that we don't get in touch with who we really are. And what's the nafkamina? The nafkamina is the greatest possible sipuk, simchas achayim for a yid, comes from energizing and being touched with that real identity that he has. So it's not just an interesting piece of psychological information, it's the way that a yid will find the greatest simcha in life. In fact, I was sitting near a fellow who's a successful businessman at a simcha not so long ago, and he said, I work very long hours, I don't know what it was, let's say 7 in the morning till 9 at night, whatever it is. And he said to me, the best part of the day is when I get to stop to daven mincha and I learn from a sefer for 15 minutes. He said, the rest of the day I feel I have to work and I have to do more and there's expectations, v'chulei v'chulei. He said, the best part of my day, because by the time he comes home he's exhausted, is the mincha and 15 minutes of learning. And he is, Baruch Hashem, in touch with his reality. His reality is, a yid has a she'ifas for dveikas with Hashem, a yearning to connect to Hashem, and at least he recognizes it. Halavai, he'll turn it from 15 minutes into half an hour into an hour, but at least he sees that. So now I want to move on a bit to Shavuos. So I'm going to begin again, I'm sorry, with things that a lot of people assume they know these, but develop towards what I believe is quite a strong kasha. There's the Chinuch in Shin Vav who says that we are counting the Sfira not as a standalone mitzvah, but as a hachana towards Shavuos, right? We've all heard that idea before. You could have thought, there's a mitzvah of counting, there's a Shavuos, what do they have to do with each other? The Chinuch says, no, this is a preparation time for the other one. Number two, Rav Aaron Kotler writes, and this is again an idea that we've heard, if that's what we're doing, we're counting towards a big day, so let's count down. So we say, no, we're going to count up. And what's the idea? So the idea is, counting up is about making a bigger and bigger kinyan towards Shavuos. So it's not that we're going to get, let's say, lahavdil, $1 million at the end, Shavuos, and there's going to be a big package waiting for us. No, every day is another day, again, lahavdil, $10,000, $10,000, and every day is a building, building, building until you reach the top. So that's an idea I imagine we've all heard. So now, and we understand this intuitively. If you would have a cousin who has a nephew, a cousin who has a son who just got out of medical school, and you say to him, no, how was medical school? So he says to you, from the day I went in, I was counting the days till graduation. Okay? Now, his brother, who's also a doctor, saying, you? He said, I was counting all the rotations that I did. Another opportunity to learn. Another opportunity to get more skills. Now, I can tell you which doctor I'd go to. Right? The one who looks at the time as the time of acquisition is going to come out with it totally different than the one that just looks towards, in our case, Shruas, as some sort of passing of time until Shruas comes along. And Moshe Shapir Zatzal said that the name of Shruas is Megala all of this to it. Most of the Yom Tovim is called Pesach, because it's called in Pesach, Sukkah, because we sit in the Sukkah, and Shruas has a funny name. Shruas, what is Shruas? Shruas means weeks. Well, there's no weeks, but Pashtus and the day of Shruas. The weeks that lead up to Shruas. Says the essence of Shruas is the Hachana for Shruas. If we don't prepare ourselves for Shruas, then we've missed out on one of the Ikarim of what Shruas is. Very good to stay up all night and learn Torah, very good to do all the things that Shruas requires, but the name tells you, get ready for the day. Don't rock up on the day and say, now I'm ready to stay up with six coffees. That's good, you know, especially if you like coffee. But that's not where we're heading with this. It should be a person comes with some sort of a preparation. And the Michtav Meliyahu writes that we see some of what the preparation is from the number of days, 49 days. 49 days, 7 times 7. So he has several comparisons to a Zava. So Zava needs Zayin Nekiyim. And he says, we see from her dinim some of what we're trying to accomplish with our counting. It says like this. Number one, she's trying to get rid of Tuma. Right? That's what a Zava has. She, the problem is Tuma. So too, we are trying to get rid of the Tuma that we had when we came out of Mitzrayim. And every generation, we're trying to get rid of the Tuma to prepare ourselves for Shuas. To say, go from the Korban, which was behemoth food, the Omer, to Shuas, we're going to get human food, Lechem, the Shtei Lechem. Number two, why is it 7 times 7? So he says, on every level of accomplishment, of nikias, of cleaning ourselves, there's also a depth to it. So that means we not only want to create the tsura of a yid, we want to go into the depths of ourselves, cleaning ourselves completely. So I'll tell you an interesting story along these lines. My father was visiting recently, and he said to me, you know the old family story, which of course I didn't know. He said, you know how my grandfather, meaning my great-grandfather, they came from South Africa. So they had, they lived in the countryside at the time. You know, Johannesburg was probably not such a big town, and they lived in the countryside. And they owned a farm which was 100 acres. Now, 100 acres, okay, it was Africa, and probably land was going cheap. But how big is 100 acres? I imagine it's not so far off Heaton Park. Anybody know how big Heaton Park is? How much? How many acres is that? You know, don't know. It's big. 640 acres? Okay. So it's not quite as big, very good, not quite as big, but it's a big place. So he said to me, so I said, no, well, you know, let's go visit the ranch. So he said to me, no, they sold it. I said, oh. So he said, yeah, but they sold it. And just before they sold it, someone gave them some very good advice. They said, sell the land, but keep the mineral rights. Now in South Africa, the mineral rights, we can understand, could be very valuable. So already, you know, I'm planning my trip to Acapulco, and I say to my father, no, so what's with the mineral rights? So he says, no, someone once dug there, a company came and dug, and they didn't find anything. So, okay, so I haven't seen a penny from, and I probably never will. But nevertheless, I saw an interesting thing. However much a 100-acre farm is worth, it's probably worth something. It's got to be worth something. But if you find gold underneath, it's worth PLF. I'm still waiting for the phone call. So in the same way, as much as a yid can develop the tzura, and that's also a madrega, but the develop the panemius, that's PLF, that's much, much greater. And in fact, I never appreciated how much the external part of a yid was choshev until a story I heard from someone who I know. They were having a certain sorah, and they needed a yeshua. And they went to, they got an appointment with Rav Chaim Kanievsky, and now he's a fellow who I'd say is somewhat shomer Torah and mitzvahs. He's definitely got some room to improve, right? I wouldn't say he's putting on tefillin every day. I wouldn't say he's keeping all the laws of Shabbos. He's growing. He's a Baal Tshuva. Fine. So now he says, I'm going to go there, and he agreed with his wife, whatever Reb Chaim tells me to do, we makabel it. So what did I think? I think he's going to go, he's going to be told, we're tefillin, Shabbos, more kashrus, whatever it's going to be. He goes in, and he showed me the video on his phone, so that I, you know, wasn't making it up, but I didn't think he was. So I went in, he read my letter, and the fellow who was with explained it, because he wasn't so fluent, and Reb Chaim said to him, grow a beard. Now, it's not the only time this, such stories happen, but what I found the chiddush was that this is a person who's not fully shomer mitzvahs. So they asked him to clarify. They said, grow a beard? So Reb Chaim went like this, grow a beard. Grow a beard. There's no mistaking what he wanted him to do. So you can say, pshatim, I've come up with a few myself, but whatever it is, at least the tzura of a yid, I'm not saying everybody have to grow a beard, but I'm saying, but Reb Chaim's advice to him was, this was something kedai. He wouldn't have told him it wasn't kedai. It was kedai for him to do in his situation, and he was makabalat, and he started to grow a beard. But we see, it wasn't a personal comment. Nobody should take it personally. The point is that the tzura of a yid, whatever it is, that we go with a kapel, and we go with tzitzis, and we go dressed like a frum person, or however it is. So I think it's just our uniform. So it seems to me that there is a tremendous amount to identifying ourselves as a yid. And we're saying we want to go even deeper. We want to go to the seven madrigas of seven, trying to get ourselves completely removed from the tamei and into the tahor. Another nakuda he says is v'safrala. We learned that she counts for herself. So he says, what's with her counting for herself? I mean, she is believed to say about herself that she's had a yom naki. So im kain, that's the same as well. The ultimate judge on ourselves, are we moving, is ourselves. It means Hashem is really the ultimate judge, but it means the fact that I'm doing as much as my neighbor and I'm keeping up with the kollel, whatever I'm doing, that's not the test whether I'm really steiging. The real test is v'safrala, count for yourself. Figure out for yourself if you're steiging. Another point is that the days have to be consecutive. And Zalba's days have to be consecutive, our days have to be consecutive. Imagine you have a fellow who goes way off the derech, and he becomes a min, and he gets put in cherem. In the olden days, let's say, when this was something of a powerful tool, and he was cast out from the whole community, fine. So he comes back a few years, and he says, I've done tshuva, I want to come back. So Beis Din's interviewing and said, you know, how do we know? He says, no, look, I'm taking on the mitzvahs. He says, okay, he says, in Shabbos, yeah, I'm keeping Shabbos. And he says to them, just as they're about to, you know, rescind their cherem, he says to them, I hope you don't mind, on Sundays I have other plans. What do you mean on Sunday? Well, I just can't get over the music and the bass tifla. I have to have one day where I reconnect. So he said to them, get out of here. What are you talking about? You can't be connected. You can't say you're back to Yiddishkeit if it's not consistent. You have to have consistency. So in the same way, by the Svira, we say everybody agrees you have to count Lachat Chila all the days in Seder. If you miss it, it's a different halachic discussion. But that's a Nakuda. The Nakuda is we have to be consistent in our growth. So now, onto the question. The Kasha is as follows. We've said that the preparation is essential. And we said that if we prepare properly, with Yid's Koichos and his Madregas are unimaginable, right up to the Kisei HaKavod. But what is the preparation? We're counting. We're counting days. So, now Bishleba, if you would say, the Talmidim or Rabbi Yisrael Salanter said, every day work on one of the 48 Kinyanei HaTorah. So I could hear, this is like the new rotation for the doctor. Today I'm working on a nova, or whatever it is I'm working on. I'm working on certain projects along the way and building myself up. Or if you say, like the Mekubalim tell us, each day has a sphira and a sub-sphira. So today I'm working on Malchus. What's today? Vura Sheba Malchus. Chesed Sheba Malchus. That's what I'm working on today. So then I hear there's a specific project. But what are we told? The pashtus of the psukim is nothing about this. The psukim say, count today. Today is day one. Today is day two. Today is day three. And so we go. Now what are we accomplishing? If this is the big hachana, and the Torah is telling us this is the hachana, what is the hachana of counting days? Now I was very, very chuffed to see that Reb Shimshon Pinchas asked the same question. His answer was a very deep and difficult answer. I'm not going to try to say it over. I'm trying to say a different answer, which I found out subsequently is not my own. I thought of it, but then I was told that it comes in Sforim. Sforim say the same idea. And that is, what are we doing by counting days? One very important tool we're acquiring towards Shuas. And that is the chashivas of time. If you count days, if you go your whole year and you never count a day, you never see the time has gone by, then things become a big blur. Like when you get your next birthday, I don't know if anybody keeps track of the birthdays, but you go, gosh, where did the whole year go by? That's the feeling many people have. I can't believe I'm a year older, right? But if you start counting days, at least for one tekufa during the year, you say, this day is chashiv, and this day is chashiv, and this day is chashiv. A person reawakens in themselves the chashivas of time. And if a person says, it's enough for me the Torah lifestyle. I've heard this term lately, I don't quite relate to it. The Torah lifestyle. Okay, it's interesting approach. But what will happen to such a person? In 120 years of Torah lifestyle, they'll end up with 15 years of Yiddishkeit. There'll be a lot of time lost between the gaps and things. You don't capitalize on time. Anybody who tells you, who's in business, however many deals you can cram into the day, that's another X number of pounds. It's another, however it goes. Every minute of the day is precious. You're not staying away from your family for hours and hours to waste your time. If you're going to the office at 7 in the morning, coming back at 9 at night, and most of the time is spent drinking coffee, so then I advise you to go home earlier. Right? Hopefully, if you're keeping long hours, at least making some money there. Yeah? So, we're trying to refresh our appreciation for time. And this is an idea I think we see that, although I looked for it, I couldn't find. We know that Adam Arishan was told after 8 from the 8 Sadas that he was going to die. And we saw the generations, as it went down to times of Moshe Rabbeinu, got shorter and shorter. So what's with life getting shorter and shorter? So one pshat is because of our connection to Tuma, we couldn't live as long. But there's a different pshat, and that is a person who feels the lachatz of time will do more. If I tell you, if you tell your builders who are doing extension, don't worry about it, just get it finished sometime in the next 6 months. So how long will it take them to get finished? 8 months, 10 months, 12 months. But if you tell them, I'm making a bar mitzvah, or have you explained that in Polish, in 3 weeks' time, you might get it done in 5 weeks' time. You put them under a time pressure, and people perform better. So now, I want to discuss this idea of the chashivas of time a little bit more. There are three Gemaras in Avodah Zarah which all have the same ending. The three stories, three maisim, which people are probably familiar with, I'll just summarize them, and we'll see that the ending is what's surprising. Number one, it says that not all the Nesiim of Edom were bad. There was one, this is an Avodah Zarah Daf Yudamid Beis, there was one called Ketia Bar Shalom. So what was the story with him? There was a Caesar, a Caesar at the time, who hated the son of Yisrael, and he said to his group of advisors, let's kill them, basically. He said, if you have a person has a hair on their foot and it's causing him pain, what do you do with the hair? You cut it off. So these Yidden are bothering us, let's cut them off. So this Goyisha Roman, whoever was senator, stood up and said, I'd like to try to say the other side. Very risky thing to do. So he says, no, number one, you're not going to succeed. He brought Psukim, Azariah, as Chazal often do, they bring Psukim. I don't know how the Goy would know that, but basically that you won't succeed. Number two, he said, your Malchus will be considered a cut-off Malchus. If you cut off a whole nation, so you'll be bringing disgrace to your own Malchus. So the king, interestingly, was Moida ala Emes, but with a string attached. So he said to him, Shapir Ka'omras, you've said very good, meaning your point's taken. However, there's one downside. Miu called to Zachi Malka Shodile Lukumnia Khalila. Anybody who beats the king in a debate, he gets dropped into quicksand to suffocate to death. So there's an upside, but there's also a downside. So they took him out to kill him. And as he was going, a Roman noblewoman called out to him, isn't it a shame for a ship to come into port and not have paid his taxes? And she understood that she was telling him to make a bris mila on himself before he's executed. So he did. He says he fell down, he found a knife, he did bris mila, and he said, now the ship can enter. Anyway, they took him in and they dropped him into this place. And as they were dropping him, he said, half of all of my possessions should be to Rabbi Akiva and his Talmidim. And a bas kol came out and said, Ketia bar shalom mezumen l'chayu l'mabo. Gavaldika, he saved the Yidden, the risk of his life. I'm sure he knew what was coming. He wasn't a fool. And did his bris mila. And he was zoichet chayu l'mabo. But listen to what happens. What would we expect? Rebbe comes in with a comment. The Gemara says, Bacha Rebbe. Rebbe cried. What's he crying about? The words we understand. There are those who spend years and years trying to acquire Olam Haba, and there are those who get it in a moment. Fine. But what are you crying about? What's the crying? Second Gemara, very similar idea. This one I try to summarize because it's quite long and everybody knows it. Believe Rabbi Dezavar Dordoy, he was the one who traveled to see all the Zoinas. If finally he saved up his money, went to see the 5-star, and she said to him, you know, you're never going to go back. You're never going to make it back to Shem. So he starts crying and crying, asks the Shemayim, the Chamel, the Vona, all to daven for him. Finally he says at the end, he says, I see the thing is only B. I'm the only one who can do anything about it. And he cried until he was nifter. So what happens? The Gemara says again, the same lashon, Bocha Rebbe, Rebbe cried. Rebbe cried, V'omer yesh koina oilomo b'kamashanim v'yesh koina oilomo b'sha'achas. Number one, so again, the same crying and then the same statement. And then he adds, V'omer Rebbe, loy dayin labale tshuva shemakablin oisam. It's not enough that Hashem receives them, ela shekorin oisa Rebbe. He got the title of Rebbe, because the Baskol called him Rebbe. But again, he's crying. Third Maisa, again, probably familiar, just summarize it so appreciate what the Gemara is saying. This was the story of Rabbi Chanina ben Tradion, and he went to visit Rabbi Yosef ben Kisma before Yosef ben Kisma died. So he goes in, and Rabbi Yosef ben Kisma says to him, he's an old man, and he was apparently unwell. We'll see, he dies, and he says to him, you know, I hear you're teaching Torah Barabim. So he says, yes. He says, we shouldn't do that. The Romans were decreed Minashamayim. They had a debate back and forth. And he says, Rabbi Yosef says, at the end of it, says, I wouldn't be surprised if they're going to take you out and burn you in a Sefer Torah. And at his Levaya, Rabbi Yosef's Levaya, sure enough, they came and they chapped Rabbi Chanina ben Tradion, and they said to him, right, you're chayv Misa, Misa's for being marred b'malchus, and we're going to kill you. And how are they going to burn you? They wrapped him in a Sefer Torah, and they're going to burn him. So he's being burned to death, and his daughter comes to him, says, "What's, you know, how can I bear to see you like this?" So he says, "The same is going to take vengeance on the Sefer Torah, will avenge me." Then the Talmidim say, "What do you see?" He says the famous line, you say, "The Gilyan is Rafim Ve'Oisius Parchin," and I see that the cloth is being burned, but the letters are flying upwards. It's a different discussion what all that means. They said to him, "So open your mouth and kill yourself. Open your mouth to the fire and kill yourself faster." He says, "No, I'll wait until Hashem is ready to take me. I'm not actively going to kill myself." So now a very interesting thing happens, and the executioner. Now, can imagine who is appointed to be the executioner for the Romans of righteous people? The fellow must have been a very, very big villain. And he's watching all of this, and even he is moved by the scene. And he says to him an incredible thing. He says, if I increase the flames and I remove the wet cloths that have been wrapped around you, that you die more quickly, will you guarantee me a place in Olam Haba? So, for this, Rabbi Chanina, although he didn't want to open his own mouth to kill himself, but he was willing to mask him that this Goyish executioner should kill him. So he said, yes. So he said, swear to me. So he swore to him. And the Goy kept his word, took the things off, the fire went up, and he died instantly. And as he died, the executioner jumped in as well. I guess he realized you can't do this kind of thing and live to tell about it. So he jumped in as well, and a Baskol comes out and says, as we saw before, similar idea, Rabbi Chanina ben Tradion and the executioner, Mizumanim Hein L'Chai Ha'olam Haba. I wouldn't mind being in the same sentence as Rabbi Chanina anywhere. And this executioner made it in the same sentence as him, and they're both going to Olam Haba. And Rebbe again cries, Bocha Rebbe, V'omer Yeshkan Olam B'Sha'achas V'Yeshkan Olam B'Kam Ashonim. Same thing. Now the question is asked, what is he crying about? What is he crying about? So I heard a beautiful answer to this, and this is maybe all we have time for. The Rebbe Chaim Waxman says a mashal. Two boys come home late at night. They sneak into the house, and the father's waiting for them by the settee, and he knows they've been up to mischief, and they come in separately, and he says, right, what's going on around here? It's, you know, 2:00 in the morning, where have you been? So the one boy says, I'll come clean. I was out with my friends, we were drinking, we were gambling, and I lost 5 pounds. I took 5 pounds from the pushka over here, whatever, not pushka, but I took 5 pounds from the box, lost 5 pounds. The father says, I'll never do it again. Father says, fine, you know, don't do it again, go to bed. So the second boy says, things went okay. So he says, I must admit I was doing the same thing. I was up with my friends, and we were gambling and staying up late, and you should know, I made 10,000 pounds. So the father gives him a smack across the face. And the boy says, what's going on around here? My brother, you let him off, and me, you smack in the face. So he says, if you made 10,000 pounds, that means you were risking 10,000 pounds of mine. Sure, you came back 10,000 pounds, but how much were you risking? So he says, that's the pshat in why Rebbe was crying. Rebbe saw if a goy, an executioner, in a single moment can go from the lowest of the low to becoming, in the same sentence, that he'll be zoichet chayim olam haba. In that second, he can do it. He said, woe to us. How many seconds slip through our fingers? What are we risking? How much fortune is in our hands? And they're slipping through and we don't even realize it. If you see from the stakes, how much is potential, what the potential is to be gained. So that's the vort again, a sensitivity to the idea that time is precious. As we prepare for Shavuos, that's an akuda that can't be stressed enough. If we know that time is precious, know that every moment has it in Chai Olam Haba, then our relationship with Torah will be greater, our connection to Torah will be greater, the amount of effort we put into Torah will be greater, and we should all be zeicha to an Emes Tikkun Kabbalah Satir.
Thank you.